Welcome to Animals Today, your home for serious talk about animals. I'm Dr. Lori Kirschner. Thanks for joining us. In our never-ending quest to encourage people to think more deeply and critically about animals, we're always looking out for novel ideas, interesting people, and compelling events about animals. You never really know what's going to inspire someone to take action for the animals or to do more than that they're already doing. So from a story about girls raising money for a local shelter by selling lemonade, to one about obtaining undercover video of animal cruelty, or an item on teaching animal law to students, we try to put it all on the show for you. So in that spirit, we have a special topic for you today. Our guest, Professor Richard Schwartz, is trying to resurrect and modernize an almost forgotten holiday, all for the benefit of animals. And I think the environment, too. So later in the show, we'll be discussing Larry, the very lucky lobster, and the latest controversy concerning Sea Shepherd Captain Paul Watson. So now I'd like to welcome Richard Schwartz, Professor Emeritus, College of Staten Island. Richard is a strong advocate for animals and vegetarianism and veganism. Richard is the president of Jewish Vegetarians of North America and president of the Society of Ethical and Religious Vegetarians, SERV. Also, I know he wants me to remind you to like the Jewish Vegetarians of North America on Facebook. Welcome to the program, Richard.
Thank you for this great opportunity. I really appreciate it and all the wonderful things you've been doing for so many years, and I wish you much continued success.
Thank you, Richard. And we've had you on the show before a couple times. We always appreciate your insights, so welcome back. Listen, let's start with the basic concept, which is you are attempting to restore and transform an ancient Jewish holiday. Richard, what holiday are we speaking of and why?
Okay, first I want to put things in a little perspective. The reason I'm doing this is, very unfortunately, the world is heading toward a climate catastrophe, and we're seeing that every day in the news. The drought here in the U.S., I think it's affecting two-thirds of the country. That so many areas have had heat waves. We know about the wildfires out in Colorado. I go on and on, and just the polar ice caps are melting, the glaciers are melting. You know, something very devastating. Everything possible has to be done. And as you know and your audience knows very well, a major shift to vegetarianism is a very important part of that. And, of course, that would mean treating the animals much better, which, thank God, your wonderful program has been advocating for so many years. And, in addition, so much to be done. I've been working primarily in the Jewish community, but as you mentioned, also the Society for Ethical and Religious Vegetarians. Other religions also are based on compassion, have very powerful teachings. But once again, unfortunately, there is so much denial out there, you know, that people don't realize what's happening, that this has to become a major, major focus. You know, everything we do has to be related to it. So anyway, that gets us back to the holiday. We have to do something dramatic, something to try to wake people up. So we're taking this holiday, which is over 2,000 years old, and it was related to something kind of negative from our perspective, that is the sacrifice of animals, but it's called the New Year for Animals. So we're trying to resurrect it, but with a completely different focus, certainly not related to sacrifices, but to greatly increase awareness that Judaism has very powerful teachings on compassion for animals, other religions too, based on compassion, and we want to bring that out. And we want the holiday to represent what's called a tikkun, or like a healing for the terrible ways that animals are treated. So we're hoping to do this, and in doing that, force the Jewish establishment, I hope later all religious establishments, to stop being so much in denial, to take note and say, we just can't have business as usual as the world heads to the climate catastrophe, as in effect, as others have said, we are sort of rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic while the world is heading toward that giant iceberg. So that's sort of a summary of why I'm involved in this.
Okay, so the old model for this holiday, and you're saying it was called New Year's Day? Is that
Well, it's a new year for the animals.
Uh-huh.
And actually, there's four New Years in the Jewish tradition. One, of course, almost everybody's familiar with, Rosh Hashanah, followed by Yom Kippur, and that's coming up in about maybe a month and a half. But there are also other New Years. One that is a motto is a New Year for trees, and that also died out for many years. That was resurrected. Now it's called Tu B'Shvat, for the 15th day of the Hebrew month of Shvat. And that is becoming more and more popular. It's almost like a Jewish Earth Day. So, and more people have seders, you know, there's a lot of fruits being eaten, a lot of blessings, and a lot of consideration of the environment and how it's been so negatively affected and what can be done about it. So that's like a model. And now this, again, it's called the New Year for the Animals. So the idea is, you know, not to be completely new in things, but to take something that was a holiday and try to bring it back, because, as you well know, the tremendous mistreatment of animals on factory farms is a major, major cause of climate change. Some have pointed out almost all the environmental-related problems we have now are related to the fact that, you know, in the U.S. alone, 10 billion farmed animals are very cruelly treated before being slaughtered. We are feeding, in the U.S., 70% of the grain produced in the U.S. to animals destined for slaughter at a time when 20 million people worldwide are dying of hunger and its effects, and it takes a tremendous amount of water. You know, as I said, the droughts throughout the U.S., many other countries, water has become a critical issue, and yet it takes up to 14 times as much water per person on an animal-based diet than a person on a plant-based diet. So I call this madness and sheer insanity. You know, there's so many problems out there, the energy problem, water, food, climate crisis, and they're all very seriously negatively affected by animal-based diets. So if we're going to even have a chance of avoiding the catastrophes the world's heading toward, there has to be a major, major shift to plant-based diets.
Right, and the point of this holiday would really bring awareness to people, especially in the Jewish religion. It's such a great idea, Richard, and the numbers you just gave are incredible to hear. Listen, so how did this idea come about, this attempt to restore and transform an ancient Jewish holiday?
Right. Well, actually, there's a number of people that have been doing little things about it. And in the past, I hadn't thought of it because I said, you know, it's a holiday related to sacrificing animals, so we certainly don't want to remind people about that. But then, not positive exactly when, but it was like a brainstorm. Why not transform that holiday? You know, it's still a new year for animals, but in today's world, there's so much very, very cruel treatment of animals, as you well know, and of course, maybe 95% of that occurs on factory farming. So, and maybe it's because as the years go on, I see more and more the necessity of that change. I mean, as you know, a shift to plant-based diets is a very important individual choice, but it's become a societal imperative. Now, it's not that every person necessarily has to be vegetarian, but it has to be a major shift because when you realize again, 10 billion farmed animals in the U.S., 60 or more billion farmed animals worldwide, the amount of grain we feed the animals, tremendous amount of water for irrigation at a time when water is becoming so scarce, so much more energy you need, and you know, there's just some, we're cutting down the tropical rainforests, species are disappearing so rapidly, soil is being eroded, all of these related to animal-based diet, not to mention, of course, in addition to the terrible ways that animals are treated, the very, very negative health effects, you know, the health costs have been soaring. There's an epidemic of disease out there. So it's like, as you know, a shift to plant-based diet would be like a win-win-win-win-win-win situation. It would help on health, on compassion for animals, on reducing climate change, on reducing hunger, and also even reducing the possibilities of war and violence, because when you have a wasteful system, it's more likely that there'll be shortages, and there's more likely to be instability, terrorism, and war. As a matter of fact, many military people are concerned that climate change, by causing droughts and wildfires, heat waves, storms, all kinds of negative effects, is going to cause a tremendous amount of desperate, hungry, thirsty refugees, and that makes instability and violence far more likely.
Very good. So don't go away. We're speaking to Richard Schwartz. We're talking about this new holiday he's trying to revive, and it's an old modern holiday we're going to try to transform here. Richard Schwartz, right after the break, we're going to ask Richard to review for us a little bit about what the Jewish teaching are, the Jewish teachings are in terms of the treatment of animals. So don't go away. You're listening to Animals Today.
The Indians send signals from the rocks above the pass. The cowboys take position in the bushes and the grass. The score is with the corporal, she is tied against a tree. She doesn't mind the language, it's the beating she don't need. She lets loose all the horses when the corporal is asleep. And he wakes to find the fires dead and arrows in his axe.
Welcome back to Animals Today. I'm Dr. Lori Kirschner, and we're speaking to Richard Schwartz. And Richard is trying to revive and transform a Jewish holiday. Richard, remind my listeners, what is the name of this holiday, the new name of the holiday?
Well, okay, in Hebrew, it's Rosh Hashanah, just like the big Rosh Hashanah that people know about. It's a new year.
Mm-hmm.
It's Rosh Hashanah La Habahemot. Sorry,
mm-hmm.
Rosh Hashanah La Behemot, which means, and Behemot are like animals, so it's a new year for animals. There's that other one I had mentioned before, Rosh Hashanah La Ilanot, that's a new year for trees. Okay, so that's it, basically. It's a new year for animals, and it's hopefully one day to focus. I mean, theoretically, as you know, every single day, we should be concerned about animals, treat them the right way, be compassionate.
Right.
It's not like, God forbid, 364 days of the year, you can be terrible to animals and feel good that one day. So, but
right.
You know, as another case, it's like a reminder of the beautiful Jewish teachings. So I'd like to summarize them, if I can, the Jewish
sure.
teachings on compassion for animals. And again, as I mentioned, other religions are also based on compassion, so I'm hoping every single religion will also put them into practice. In a way, that's a tragedy of religion today. You know, there's great, great, great teachings, but what good are they if they're not put into practice and all? If, you know, right next door to where you're teaching how great these teachings are, the animals are so mistreated. Anyway, so just a quick summary. It says in the book of Psalms that God's compassion is over all God's works. And that, of course, includes animals. So God is concerned about animals, and Judaism teaches that we are to imitate God's positive attributes, compassion and mercy and justice and all the positive things. Now, in the book of Proverbs, it indicates the righteous individual considers the life of his or her animal. So again, it's like a test of, compassion and a test for righteousness. And also, it's a test for leadership, because the great Jewish leaders, Moses and King David, were both deemed suitable to be leaders of the Jewish people because they were very kind to animals as shepherds. The Torah teaches you can't yoke a strong and weak animal together. You can't muddle an ox when threshing in the field. It's so important, the idea of kindness to animals. It's part of the Ten Commandments, which is like, you know, major focus in Judaism. And of course, it says that not only are Jews to rest on a Sabbath day, but animals are to rest as well. And Judaism teaches as well that if a person has a pet or a farm animal, you are not to sit down for your own meal before seeing that the needs of the animal are met, that the animal is fed first. So again, you can see this is all summarized in a beautiful phrase, Hebrew, Tzar Balei Chayim, which means it's a mandate to avoid causing any sorrow to living creatures or to animals. So once again, this is considered as part of the Torah, you know, the highest of Jewish laws, that Jews should be compassionate animals. But as you know, the realities there are so far from that. The way chickens are raised and cows and milked, et cetera, et cetera. So the reality is so far from the Jewish teachings and the teachings about compassion in other religions.
So, Richard, do you look at it as just the reality is so far from it, or isn't it almost like a hypocrisy there that our Jewish teachings are so different from the actions of
it should be,
Jewish
leaders? As some have said, in Judaism, they're building fences, in effect, around certain mitzvot or commandments. Some of them they treat to the nth degree, you know, they look at every minutia. But unfortunately, there's some other very powerful teachings that are ignored, like the Tzar Baruch Chaim, that we should be compassionate to animals. Another powerful teaching is Baal Tashchit, which is you are not to waste or unnecessarily destroy anything of value. And as you know, we live in a society where it's buy, use, and throw away, a throwaway society. So a lot of teachings like that. Justice, shalt thou pursue, seek peace and pursue it. Very strong teachings. That is why, by the way, I have recently published a book called Who Stole My Religion? Revitalizing Judaism and Applying Jewish Values to Help Heal Our Imperiled Planet. Try to wake people up. I think it was the Christian theologian and philosopher Kierkegaard who once said, in effect, Christianity is a wonderful thing, too bad it's never been tried. So that is a big, big problem, that we have religions with wonderful teachings, but they're often ignored in the face of the problems. I would say if somebody's really religious, they should be one of the biggest challenges to the status quo, to what's going on, the massive killing of animals, and the many other examples of injustice and oppression that are happening in this world.
Right. And just to repeat to my listeners the name of the book, Who Stole My Religion? Who Stole My Religion? Richard Schwartz we're speaking to. Richard, you mentioned in a prior segment that the holiday was originally related to animal sacrifices. Why were animal sacrifices part of the Jewish religion?
Right. Okay, well, actually, many thousands of years ago, sacrifices were like the common mode of worship. And just like today, it's mostly services, Sundays for Christians, Saturday or Shabbat for Jews, etc. And if somebody came and said, you know, if you would just be kind to each other, you know, God doesn't need your prayers, that's more important, people are just not ready to accept that. Same thing, this was a common mode of worship, and it was felt that if they tried to eliminate that in Judaism, people may have rejected that, maybe all of Judaism. But a few things about that. First of all, within Judaism, at least, it was a step forward. Sometimes you have to move little bits at a time. But before that, they had pagan practices. They had child sacrifices, human sacrifices in general. So at least, thank God, that was eliminated. Also, the sacrifices were kept in one central location. It wasn't like somebody could just say, you know, I just feel like I'm going to sacrifice an animal here in my home or something. One central location with the idea of winning the people off of the sacrifices. And the biblical prophets were very, very critical. If people sacrifices, but were also involved in injustice, etc. It just happens that as we speak, and I understand this program will be broadcast on a Sunday, which is the Jewish holiday of Tisha B'Av, just before that, on Shabbat, we hear the challenging words of Isaiah, who is very critical and almost compares the Jewish people in that time to Sodom and Gomorrah and says, you know, the sacrifice can be an abomination, your hands are full of blood. The prophet said that God is really concerned about mercy and justice, and the sacrifices were meant to be a reminder of that, and that time, just as the prayers should be today. So,
Richard, we got to take a quick break. Very interesting. We're speaking to Professor Richard Schwartz. Don't go away.
Kinda like to be alone.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. We're speaking to Professor Richard Schwartz. Richard, for those listeners just tuning in, give us a nutshell of what we're trying to do here.
Okay, well, quick nutshell is that the world is facing so many critical problems, climate change, deforestation, shortages of water, energy, etc. So something has to be done. It has to become a central focus to give us a chance to avoid the disasters. And a major thing that has to be done is a major shift to plant-based diets. And I'm coming at it from a religious point of view, but others can take it. We've got to come at it from every point of view, educational, political, etc. But anyway, Judaism has powerful teachings. Other religions have as well. They're all based on compassion and justice and peace, great things. But unfortunately, there's all too much denial, apathy, ignorance, resistance out there. We have to break through that. So I came up with this idea of taking this ancient, largely forgotten Jewish holiday, the New Year for animals, initially related to sacrifices, but saying, let's have this holiday, you know, not coming out from left field or something there, but let's transform it. Thank God we don't have the sacrifices today, but let's make it a holiday to make people aware that an important part, an essential part of being religious is to have compassion, and certainly on the most defenseless creatures, the animals, it's part of every religion. So let's transform that holiday and make it a day to increase awareness about the importance of treating animals better, again, based on religion. We're not saying let's create some brand new religion or ignore it. Let's challenge religious people to put the highest values into practice. That's the important thing. You know, otherwise, you say it's like hypocrisy. If you talk about all the wonderful things and teachings, but then you don't put it into practice.
Right. Very good summary. Richard, is it possible to convince a typical American rabbi who holds traditional Jewish views about animals to adopt this notion and ask their congregations to begin observing a new holiday?
Well, that is going to be the challenge, and thank God there are some rabbis supporting us, but there's still many that are going to be in denial. That's why, by the way, for many, many years, I've been trying to get a respectful dialogue debate going on should Jews be vegetarians. Now, again, I'm not a Talmudic scholar. Most rabbis know far more about Judaism, although I specialize in one area. But the thing is, like other religions, there are at least six very powerful mandates in Judaism that no rabbi can deny that are violated very strongly by animal-based diets. Very briefly, just mentioning them, these are to take care of our health, to treat animals with compassion, to be co-workers with God in protecting the environment, to conserve natural resources, to help hungry people, and to seek and pursue peace. So these are basic. They're all violated. Because, as you know, animal-based diets are very, very unhealthy. Certainly animals, unbelievably how bad they are treated. And we are seeing more and more the environmental effects. And we know, as we said before, it's very wasteful of grains and water and energy. And there's tremendous hunger, 20 million people dying of hunger every single year, while we're feeding 70% of the grain in the U.S. to animals. And in terms of seeking and pursuing peace, which people may not see as readily, the ancient rabbis saw that the Hebrew words for bread, which is lechem, and war, milchama, they come from the same root. They deduce when there's a shortage of grain and other resources, people are more likely to go to war. So a shift toward a much more efficient plant-based diet can make a big, big difference. And this is why I have been advocating for years that the slogan of the peace movement and the vegetarian movement should be one and the same. Same slogan, peace movement, vegetarian movement. And that is, all we're saying is give peas a chance, if you pardon the pun.
Yes, I remember that line that you gave us last time. That's great.
We're trying to spread that word.
Yeah. Right. Richard, what has been the response of the Jewish community as a whole so far?
Okay, well, first of all, this is like a week old, this idea.
Okay,
and,
good.
I have, thank God, some very good rabbis. An Orthodox rabbi, Yitz Greenberg, who's supporting that, and we have that in our press release. And what's very important about that is he has written almost the book on the Jewish holidays. So that's good. Then there's a rabbi, some in your area may be familiar with, Rabbi David Wolpe, W-O-L-P-E, one of the leading conservative rabbis. He's supporting it. A leading rabbi in Israel, Rabbi Adam Frank, is supporting it. And we have a list of 10 or 12 rabbis and a whole bunch of vegetarian and environmental groups. So it's a slow start, and that's why, by the way, I hope every person listening here, if they're Jewish, will go to their rabbi and say, can we get a dialogue going, you know, very respectfully. Or if you are not Jewish, speak to your Jewish friends or somehow, or speak to your ministers and priests in general and say, somebody's been saying that this is a critical issue, the world's facing so many problems, and a shift to vegetarianism can make such a big, big difference. So things are slow, but this is something we're going to push just beginning this year. We hope in succeeding years it will get bigger and bigger. We do have two seders scheduled. You know, Passover they have seders, at Tu B'Shvat they have seders.
Mm-hmm.
So we're starting here to have get-togethers where people can discuss the teachings about animals and tell their personal connections to animals, etc.
So how can, other than what you just mentioned, how can individuals learn more about this project and help you?
Okay, thank you very much for that. Okay, I have a tremendous amount of material, and the issues are so, so important that I'm giving them all away freely. First of all, I have a website, and that website is Jewish, one word followed by V-E-G, jewishveg.com, and then a slash, and then my last name, S-C-H-W-A-R-T-Z. I have 150 articles here. I have 25 podcasts, my talks and interviews, and I have put the complete text of my book, the third edition of Judaism and Vegetarianism there, and the second edition of my book, Judaism and Global Survival, which is like a precursor to my third book, which is, as we mentioned before, Who Stole My Religion? This is, we got to challenge the religious establishment. Who Stole My Religion? Revitalizing Judaism and Applying Jewish Values to Help Heal Our Imperiled Planet. And if anybody goes to the title of that book on the internet, whostolemyreligion.com, scroll down just a little bit, there's a link where you can read the entire e-book or download it, because the issues are so important. We just want to get the message to as many people as possible. We also have created a one-hour, very powerful documentary with the same kind of theme called A Sacred Duty, Applying Jewish Values to Help Heal the World. And that, if people go to that title, just asacredduty.com, that sort of connects you to YouTube, and you can watch the, just exactly 1 hour documentary. And that was produced by Lionel Friedberg, a multi-award winning producer. He's got Emmy Awards, and thank God he did it as a labor of love and dedication, not taking even a penny of professional fee, because we paid expenses and all, but we couldn't have done it if we had to pay the tremendous amount he was worth. So sacredduty.com, hope people will take a look at that. We also have given away 35,000 to 40,000 free complimentary copies of that. And by the way, if anybody wants more info or would like to help, they can email me at president at, again, one word, Jewish followed by V-E-G, jewishbeg.com, president at jewishbeg.com, and I'll be happy to work with anybody, because again, the future of humanity, the future of all life on the planet is at stake, and we can't continue rearranging the deck chairs in effect of the Titanic as we head toward that iceberg. We have to get everybody involved. We have to challenge the religious establishment. We have to establish the medical establishment to point out how a shift to vegetarian diets could really reduce threats of so many diseases. And the political establishment write letters to the media. It's got to become a major, major thing, because, as you know, climate scientists are saying we could be very close already to a tipping point we mentioned before, just look around at the daily headlines, the heat waves, the wildfires, the droughts, the melting of the polar ice caps and glaciers. We've got to do whatever we can as soon as possible.
Richard Schwartz, thank you so much for appearing on Animals Today.
Dr. Laurie, many, many thanks and best wishes for your continued success. You're doing a great job.
Thank you, sir. Don't go away. We have Peter and the news up next. Welcome back to Animals Today. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Lori.
Do you remember that song?
It's not one of their best efforts,
I
in my
love
opinion.
That song.
No.
I won't try to sing it.
Please.
Okay. Monkey Man by the Stones. Okay, go ahead.
So, speaking of monkeys, what a coincidence. The new NBC television program is scheduled to come on in the upcoming season called Animal Practice. Stars Justin Kirk, a cranky veterinarian, and he has a sidekick named Dr. Rizzo, who is a capuchin monkey.
Okay.
And the monkey helps him relate to the animals, I think. He's like their mascot of the office.
Okay.
And they bring a whole bunch of animals, and it's a, you know, it's a sitcom with animals based in a vet hospital.
Okay. So, what do you think?
Well, you know, I watched a couple trailers and previews, and it looks cute.
You think the monkey wants to be there?
This monkey, it turns out, is a very famous monkey named this Dr. Rizzo is a famous monkey. He's a celebrity. He's been in other he's known
Clint
around
Eastwood.
Town.
Clint Eastwood.
I don't know.
Okay.
Let's see. He was in The Hangover Part 2.
Okay. I don't know what that is.
Anyway. So if they can keep all the animals that are going to appear on this show healthy and happy and keep them from being injured, then I can live with it, I guess, as a general premise.
Really? Even though they're still being exploited?
Yeah, I see the exploitation, but what's the alternative for a lot of these animals? Worse, maybe.
I don't know.
Well, okay.
I don't know.
We'll have to see it in practice and
okay.
get the reviews. But it is true, animals working, it can get risky, and you have to watch the motivations.
Right, right.
So there's the monkey story, and I also wanted to follow up on the Sea Shepherd news. You know, Paul Watson, who's the founder of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, the folks in Costa Rica are trying to get him to trial. They are going after him for a 2002 episode incident where he was preventing some shark finning from occurring. And he was actually arrested in Germany, and under arrest in Germany, left. He was then released on bail and then jumped bail. So he is nowhere to be found, staying out of Germany and out of Costa Rica.
So this was 10 years ago, and Costa Rica is not letting him get away with it, huh?
Right, they're still going after him.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So where's Waldo is happening?
Yeah, okay.
Where is Watson?
Okay.
Let you know.
Yeah. Well, he's still doing great work.
Oh, we admire
yeah.
what they do very much.
Love him.
These guys put it on the line for
good.
The animals.
And this is great.
You heard about the big lobster that got a reprieve. Well, there is a 17-pound lobster who was on sale at a restaurant He was in Connecticut at a restaurant, and someone purchased him and brought him to the sea and released him in a secret place.
Purchased him knowing he was about to be boiled to death.
Yes. He saved him from being someone's dinner. His name is Don McKenzie. He said it was the most expensive lobster I never ate. And he was 17 pounds. He's been nicknamed Lucky Larry, the lobster that is. And it's estimated that he probably was 80 years old to have gotten to be 17 pounds.
Wow.
And what a shame to kill alive, boil alive, a 80-year-old creature
of any
sort.
Well, it's a shame we're boiling any animals alive.
Well, that's
it's a shame
true.
We're killing animals for food to begin with. So So is this the first time Don McKenzie has rescued a lobster in a restaurant?
Well, as far as I can tell, this is the first time in the available news reports.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully we'll never hear from Lucky Larry again if he's smart. I mean, he's smart enough to avoid being captured for 80 years. Something happened at this point that got him in someone's cage.
Yeah.
Trap.
Yeah.
Anyway, interesting story. The local kids are very excited. They gave him a send-off.
Okay, good. So maybe the local kids, every time they go in a restaurant, when they see lobster about a boil, they'll purchase them and set them free.
Yes. Big story at the LA Zoo,
mm-hmm.
We're scheduled to discuss this in a few next week probably, but a judge had a ruled against the elephant exhibit. They were being sued for having just a poor exhibit that was cruel to the elephants. They built this thing for $42 million, this habitat, and they were just really roundly criticized for not giving the elephants what they need to be happy.
So the judge agreed that they were not giving the elephants
a
satisfactory exhibit. Okay.
That's right.
And what did he rule then? Is he forcing them to change?
Well, yes, he's got a number of stipulations, but next week the attorney representing the animals named David Castleman, he's going to be appearing on the show, and we're going to get it right from his lips.
Good.
And we're going to learn about what it takes to represent elephants.
Great.
So
why don't you tell us where people can listen to shows and about our website?
Oh, you bet. So
thank you.
You want to go to animalstodayradio.com. That is our website and blog that I sort of overlook. And there you can click Listen Live if you want to listen to the live show, or you can go to our archives. And all the shows we've done over the past few years are there for your free listening pleasure. And then you want to remember to go to AIAnimals.org, Advancing the Interests of Animals. That is the nonprofit that helps keep this show going.
Right. And you can also email me at Dr. Lori, D-R-L-O-R-I, at animalstodayradio.com if you have a show idea or topic or guest you think would be good on our show.
That's
so
great.
Thank you for tuning in to Animals Today. This is Dr. Lori Kirshner encouraging you to nurture your love and compassion for the only other beings sharing our planet, the animals.